Hi, this is Rini Cremeza, the Jersey Dog Trainer, telling you to stay tuned to WNJC 1360 AM for Thursday in the Doghouse, coming right up.
Mama was a mutt, Daddy was one too. Me, I'm a little bit of everything, everything that I use. One day I'm walking down my block.
Good morning, everyone. I'm so glad you've decided to listen to Thursday in the Doghouse. My name is Rini Cremeza, and I'm the Jersey Dog Trainer. We're here every Thursday morning from 10 to 10:30 talking about my favorite subject, the dog. If you're a first-time listener and you'd like to hear some of the other shows that we've had, you can always go to my website, www.jerseydogtrainer.com. Click on the page marked Rini's Radio Show, where you'll see a list of podcast links. Click on any subject that interests you, and keep in mind that every program is about 30 minutes long. I meet a lot of dogs every day who need training. Unfortunately, I'm sometimes called on for help because someone is living with a dog who is showing aggression. What I worry most about is when a dog is showing aggression in the home environment while there are small children living under the same roof. That's what our subject is all about today. I'll be talking to Jennifer Shryock this morning. Jen is a regular listener, she's a regular visitor to the Doghouse. She's a certified dog behavior consultant from North Carolina whose specialty and expertise is working with kids and dogs. She created her own business called Family Paws, and she also created a fabulous program called Dogs and Storks that helps educate new and expecting families on how to be well prepared for the arrival of a baby when there's a resident dog in the home. Before we talk to Jen, please let me tell you about the services I offer as a professional dog trainer and certified behavior consultant in the South Jersey area. Is your dog always in the doghouse? Does he greet people by jumping all over them? Does she chew your shoes and steal your undies? Guess what? Your dog needs training. Hi, I'm Rini Cremeza, the Jersey Dog Trainer, and I train dogs using only positive-based methods. My services include private training right in your own home. I also offer group puppy kindergarten classes starting at 8 weeks of age, and group classes for adolescent and adult dogs beginning at 5 months of age. All group classes are held at Dog Days Camp for Canines, 23 West Main Street, Marlton, New Jersey. For more information, please contact me at 609-280-9338 or on the web at www.jerseydogtrainer.com. Again, that's 609-280-9338 or on the web at www.jerseydogtrainer.com. Good morning, Jen. Jennifer, are you there?
Yeah. Hello?
Hi, Jen. How are you?
Great.
I'm glad you're here. I'm very excited that we're going to talk about this very important subject of kids living with aggressive dogs.
Yes.
Yeah. So in the time that you've been working with dogs, have you ever had a client whose toddler needed medical treatment after a puppy nipped the child?
Unfortunately, yes. And actually, many times people contact me after such an incident has already occurred. And our hope is to change that with some of the education that we provide to new and expecting families.
Okay. So in those situations, and I hope there weren't a whole lot of them, what were the circumstances?
The circumstances usually have to deal with the difference in communication between toddlers and children and dogs in general.
Mm-hmm.
As two different species, we do tend to communicate differently. And often there's miscommunication between the dog and the baby. So as a child might communicate with direct frontal approach and approach the dog head on, that can often be offensive to some dogs. And a lot of times little toddlers, I have one currently, a 19-month-old,
right.
A lot of times they're just unpredictable, unsteady, their limbs are in every direction, and that can make dogs very weary, very unsure. And so it's kind of a big mix for a very complex situation
mm-hmm.
to happen all at once. So,
mm-hmm.
But I would say miscommunication. The other thing, Rini, is often parents have expectations of how their dog should interact with their child and what their dog should, quote, put up with. And that's a big concern of mine. As soon as a family calls me, they say, but you know what? Johnny could always do A, B, C, and D. You know, they could hang on the dog, they could crawl up to the bed, they could do all these things. And that's an immediate red flag to me as soon as someone justifies and describes their dog as, you know, through what the dog put up with.
Mm-hmm.
That's really concerning to me.
Yeah,
dogs have a tolerance level.
Mm-hmm.
So that's those two, the expectations that I think we put on our dogs of what they should, quote, tolerate, and then also the miscommunication because we are two different species and we communicate differently.
Right. So here's what I do. I mean, one of the things that I make sure of, no matter who's in the house, if there's kids or not, I do a little bit of educating about body language. So if a dog was merely being tolerant, what would the owner see as far as the dog's demeanor is concerned? What would the dog be doing if he was only tolerating something?
Well, I believe every dog uses their signals in different ways, but some of the common signals that indicate stress and that people need to become familiar with how their dog uses it in the different contexts. So, for example, licking lips, it's just a quick tongue flick.
Mm-hmm.
So if you were to look straight on at your dog, gently holding their head in your hands lovingly, and look at them, they might flick their tongue and turn away from you.
Mm-hmm.
That's a natural response. And so a tongue flick, turning away, sudden scratching, itching, that's a big one, Rainey, because many times people don't understand that their dog, when they're suddenly scratching or itching or sniffing around the carpet in an area that really doesn't need that attention,
right,
that's actually a signal to me that the dog is kind of avoiding the stress, you know, trying to block out what's going on the other side of the room or something.
Right.
So we do see a lot of that. But people, the things that I see people miss are the more avoidance kinds of behaviors where the dog is turning away,
mm-hmm,
and kind of blocking what they're, you know, what the stimuli is, what the child's doing.
Mm-hmm.
So those are some of the things. Lip licking, turning away. Those are the subtle things that I think most people miss.
Right. What about, now, here's the other thing that I think is a level up from tolerance, is when you can see the whites of the dog's eyes.
Mm-hmm.
That's really a 911 situation. You've got to separate them really quickly. Do you agree?
I do agree. There is a time, but again, I think each breed and each dog is very individual with this. Some breeds tend to show that a little more than others, you
right,
know, your Boston Terrier, some, you know, so sometimes that can be a little conflicting, but you are right. In the situation where the dog is paying attention to one thing and looking at another, so we see that look a lot of time around, say a dog's eating,
mm-hmm,
and you approach, and you're going to see the whites of their eyes. Or a lot of times, Rini, when we see people hugging their dog,
right,
and they take a picture saying, isn't this cute, the dog is showing the whites of the eyes. So here's my rule of thumb with that, is it's never one signal. It's always a combination of signals. A lot of times whites of the eyes will be shown in this situation with a closed and tight muzzle,
mm-hmm,
and sometimes even breath holding. So those kinds of things are hard for parents to see, but it's something to be aware of and make a note of. I have plenty of pictures before I recognize that,
mm-hmm,
of my kids hugging the dogs and
mm-hmm
thinking, oh, look how cute.
Mm-hmm.
And now I know, you know, not so much.
Okay.
So it's a combination, I would say, that I really want people to think about.
Mm-hmm.
Wipes the eyes, closed mouth, ears back, ears, eyes, tail, muzzle. Looking at the whole picture and gathering all those clues together.
Okay. And have you had people tell you that they got angry with the dog because the dog growled at the child?
Absolutely. People really get frustrated, and I think it's a response that people jump to immediately. And what I want to encourage people is to think about this. When a dogs give levels and signals up to a point where they're really trying to communicate that they need help. Terry Ryan calls them whispers. I agree with that. So the licking lips, the turning away, whites of the eyes, those are all whispers, dogs saying, excuse me, I need some help here.
Mm-hmm.
I'm stressed, hello.
Mm-hmm.
And when they get to the growl, we've really missed a lot in between.
Mm-hmm.
So when the dog is growling, they're really saying, I need help now.
Mm-hmm.
And if we correct that, then really we're taking away a major communication signal.
Mm-hmm.
And that scares me, because often dogs will just eliminate that, say, well, growling's really bad, so what's the next step? And unfortunately, the next step tends to be biting.
Right.
So that's a big problem for me.
Mm-hmm. Jen, will you accept a case to work with a dog that is showing resource guarding behaviors if there's a young child in the home?
Absolutely. I think those cases are really important, especially for those who have had children and who specialize in this kind of area. I do think those cases are very important to help the family assess if it's a workable situation or it's a situation that is very extreme and maybe not be workable and safe for the dog and the baby in that situation.
Mm-hmm.
There are varying levels of resource guarding. So you can have your dog who says, you know, I really want to eat by myself and don't want to be crowded. But then you can have the dog who says, well, every day I'm going to pick a new baby sock that I'm going to hoard and tuck away so no one can see it, but you come near me when I have my little sock and I'm going to bite you.
Mm-hmm.
So there are varying levels, and in order for us to know and be able to help people, we really need to get in there and do a consultation and get a full background to know what we're looking at and dealing with so we can help a family make the best choice for them.
What is the level of aggression that would, let's say, you can encourage the family to continue working with the dog versus a level of aggression where the dog is seriously just about to really bite or has already bitten?
You know, there are varying degrees. I think what it comes down to for me is how much the family is really able to follow through with the steps in the management and the expectations that we put into the protocol with them.
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, there are degrees that I say this is absolutely not safe. That would be if the dog has, you know, has really seriously bitten and the family is extremely stressed and, you know, it's just there's no way to manage it. You know, so for example, I've seen many cases where it's a small living environment and the dog is a very serious resource guarder, guards everything, and is not afraid to bite the owners.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a big warning flag to me.
Mm-hmm.
Biting the people who, the adults in the home, mm-hmm. is a huge deal breaker for me.
Mm-hmm.
If they're, especially if there are children in the home, if there's a lack of respect there in that communication, that's a pretty serious thing to me.
Mm-hmm.
And that's one of my deal breakers. And usually in that situation, we'd be trying to find alternatives for the dog.
Okay. And at what age, all right, so we've been talking about really little children, babies and toddlers and things like that. When the children get older, and let's say they purchase a dog or they adopt a dog and the dog is showing some resource guarding, is it more workable when the kids are, let's say, 12 and up?
I would say that depends on the children and the parents.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it is, in most cases, it is workable if they are on board.
Right.
There is a level and degree that really comes down to, are people going to accept that this is part of who their dog is? And sometimes you just really do need to accept that management is going to be what it takes for the rest of the dog's life.
Mm-hmm.
We can always work towards a better situation, but I don't like for people to absolutely count on that too fast.
Right.
I think
process.
People get impatient and they jump the gun and then, mm-hmm. you know, the kid goes to take the bone away.
Mm-hmm.
I do find with young teens, and I have two, that sometimes their time frame and my time frame might be very different. And so that can lead to some complications. So it really comes down to if everybody's on board and we're following the same guidelines, for the dog to be successful with.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Right. So in either event, let's say you know, especially with the toddler or the baby, 4-year-old, 5-year-old, do you advise people that they must not let the dog alone with the child and vice versa? I know that you've talked to me and to our listeners before about kid-free safety zones and dog-free safety zones. Can you kind of go into a little detail about that?
Sure. Here's how I look at that. I think it's a really hard thing to put a specific generalization on an age range. Mm-hmm. What I like to do is look at each individual. We know that 3-year-olds, 2-year-olds, 1-year-olds are not able to predict an outcome and often don't have the empathizing skills to interact safely with a dog unsupervised.
Mm-hmm.
I do know my 9-year-old, actually my 10-year-old, she just turned 10.
Mm.
Can't believe it. They're growing up. I don't
right.
understand. My 10-year-old sleeps with one of our dogs and has for the past year.
Mm-hmm.
Again, you know, it's a comfort level. It's a maturity level. How do they respond with the dog? What is the relationship between the child and the dog? Definitely under 5, I'm not really comfortable with a lack of supervision.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's a lot of unpredictability there. There's a lot of miscommunication that can happen. So
mm-hmm.
the supervision needs to be tight. But then again, I've seen 10 and 12-year-olds I wouldn't want to leave the dog with because they're not going to behave appropriately with them. They're
mm-hmm.
going to rustle around with them, get them at a high arousal level, and that can backfire too. So it really, you know, I don't know if that helps answer that, Rini, but
mm-hmm.
it's circumstantial in many of those situations.
Mm-hmm.
I really, it takes both the dog's personality and the child's personality.
Right, okay.
To decide what's
sure,
safest.
Sure. When you've worked with a resource guarder who has, let's say, bitten, we're not talking about serious biting that would send a child to the emergency room,
right.
but let's say nipped the child or did a little divot
or
in the skin. Correct.
Back off, yeah.
Right. So would you feel more optimistic about the total rehabilitation of that dog in that home versus the dog that really seriously bit, where now you've got a pretty deep puncture wound?
Well, yes. I mean, a dog that has not escalated, you do have a better chance of, and there's several reasons why I would say that. You do have an opportunity and a window of opportunity to work with the dog there. But more importantly, your window of opportunity is with the people.
Mm-hmm.
Because once a dog actually leaves a scar on a child, you've got a high degree of reactivity in the parents now.
Mm-hmm.
It is very, very, very hard to stop playing that video over and over.
Mm-hmm.
And so what happens is a lot of times there becomes this discomfort and there's a breach of trust between the parent and the dog. That actually can trigger more stress and escalate any of those situations to a degree that we no longer can work with.
Mm-hmm.
So if there has not been that visual, you know, there's only been a growl, there's been a snap, a lot of times we're able to kind of work around that by changing expectations, doing some conditioning, working with the dog, and setting up proper management.
Mm-hmm. All right, so now let's go to a different type of aggression where maybe somebody has 2 or more dogs in the house, yeah, right. And you have a toddler, or you have even teenagers, or let's even say a 7 to 10-year-old child in the house, and these dogs are competing with one another. They're showing resource guarding between or among themselves and are having fights. How complicated is this to keep everybody under control?
Oh, good grief. Sounds like my house. You know, I'm listening to you, and I'm going, okay, I've got 3 dogs. Now, when my daughter, Kelsey Ann, our 4th child, was born, we had 4, and we had a very serious resource guarder. Our female, Malamute Shepherd, was, you know, did not play games with
mm-hmm.
the other dogs.
Mm-hmm.
And her management level has to be extremely high.
Mm-hmm.
We have 3 dogs, a Shepherd, a Siberian Husky, and a Pitbull. They're all rescues. And my kids are all the ages you're talking about, 15, 13, 10, and 19 months.
Wow.
And, you know, when you have multiple dogs who have conflicts going on, that becomes incredibly dangerous because if something breaks out, and I do see this quite a bit,
right?
You know, the kids jump in. Sometimes the kids jump in. The older they are, the more likely they're going to jump in.
Mm-hmm.
So it's really an important thing that that is managed, and it's also it's taken very seriously. It's taken, you know, and sometimes it doesn't work. In fact, I had a dog. I had conflict between 2 females, and we did need to rehome one of the dogs because we were unable to have harmony between those 2 females.
Okay.
It was a really heartbreaking situation for us. but it was the right choice. And that dog is incredibly successful somewhere else. But she was not going to be successful here with that, you know, with the other female. It mm-hmm. just wasn't going to work.
Mm-hmm. What worries me when there is a situation with dogs in the home, and especially females, I have to say, the risk is always higher when you have two females. And I hate to, you know, insult.
Hate to generalize, but it's true.
It is.
True, you know.
I tell my clients, you know, they don't call them bitches for nothing.
No.
You know.
And when it breaks out, it's very ugly.
Yeah.
And a lot of times they can be the best of friends up mm-hmm. until something triggers it.
Yeah.
And it can be kind of something that catches everybody off guard. I have
right.
a case right now that is, in fact, the situation.
Mm-hmm. I have a case that I just started yesterday. There's two females. One is a 13-year-old Basset Hound. The other one is a 2-year-old mixed breed. And this 2-year-old just turned 2. And I think she's just coming into her own. She's starting to snap her suspenders and say, I am here, I am queen. So there is some pretty major aggression going on between the two dogs. But thankfully, there's no small child in the home, and I think that we can work this out.
Right.
But it would worry me tremendously if there were a young child whose behavior, also being a young child, can be unpredictable.
Right, and there can become competition. There can be a lot of confusion there. In the situation with our dog who came to us, we were kind of the last stop. You know, as a dog behavior consultant, rescues don't give you the easy dogs. They usually end up with the
right.
dog that has some kind of issue, and
right.
she did, and we knew dog aggression was it.
Mm-hmm.
But we had really come a long way with her, and
mm-hmm.
I chose to adopt her, and it was just, it tore me up. But for the safety of my children
mm-hmm.
and the safety of my other dogs and to maintain harmony, unfortunately, it was the right decision to rehome her. And I like people to know that
mm-hmm.
even sometimes those of us in this field have to make those heartbreaking choices.
Right.
And, you know, we do commit to our dogs for the rest of our lives, but there are circumstances and cases where that is not the best choice for the dog or for us.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's important for people to realize that and let themselves off the hook. If you've done everything and you've really researched and you've hired someone, sometimes rehoming is the way to save the dog's life versus letting things escalate and not having options for that dog.
Right. Do you have a program when you start a new case, let's say, and it's not an aggression case at that point, and let's say you have a puppy in the home or you've just rescued, the client has just rescued a dog, and there are children in the home, do you have a program that you put people on to prevent resource guarding around food and bones and things like that?
Absolutely. I know a lot of people know, you know, and do the handling of the food and everything else, and I guess I look at that way of teaching, you know, letting a person handle your food. I don't know. I don't like it as much because I don't like people touching my food. I
sure.
get grumpy. So
sure, or taking it away.
What I do is I recommend that while the dog is eating, we walk by with something higher value. You don't even need to speak a word. You just walk by and drop, you know, kind of gifts from God, just something nice on the floor.
Right.
And let the dog choose to leave their food
uh-huh.
and come and eat that and go back to their food with no stress, no mm-hmm. communication. And eventually what happens is the dog sees feet coming towards them as a, you know, hey, what you got?
Mm-hmm.
It's an opportunity.
Right.
So that's something I like to do. I like to do that in their, you know, in their areas. I like to do that just with dogs in general because I think we need to do more rewarding, appropriate, acceptable behaviors instead of waiting for something to happen and then going back and correcting it. So
mm-hmm.
I like to let a dog know, you know, that's really what we like,
mm-hmm.
and that's a good job. If they're going to be children in that situation, then obviously we do that crawling by the dog and everything else.
Right.
You know, we do kind of change the way we walk and that kind of thing. But mm-hmm. I really like to do that. I'd rather the dog see people coming towards it
mm-hmm.
as an opportunity instead of a threat.
Sure, sure. One of the things that I like to do is to make sure that the dog is not being fed in an isolated area. I don't even know that I would have advised this had I not had a case where a wonderful lab puppy, and I had no idea that this dog was eating either outside when nobody was out there or in a very tiny laundry room area. never eating in company. So, you know, one time the dog was eating and their 2-year-old toddler happened on him unexpectedly, and out of the clear blue, the dog started to growl and snapped at the child. So everybody got all upset, but the dog had already turned like maybe 4 or 5 months old and was not taught to eat when anybody else was around. So we had to get him over that very quickly and very thoroughly, because this toddler was always, you know, going to be walking around the house and everything, and thank God we did. But ever since I've had that case, I make sure that dogs are fed out in the open.
Yeah, but, you know, that said, too, a lot of times people have expectations, and this goes back to the doggy dog stuff. A lot of times people have expectations. Dogs are going to eat with their bowls side by side. And, you know, there's a lot of, I always tell my clients, there's a lot of communication
going down.
You know, going on between these dogs down low on the floor that we're missing.
Right.
And, you know, they can give glares, the side glares, and unless you're putting a video camera down there, you're not going to capture that.
Right.
You're not going to see the communication. So when a fight breaks out, it looks like it's out of the blue. But meanwhile, every single meal, every single kibble has been a communication between those two dogs.
Correct.
And they just haven't seen it.
Right. So, the other thing that I make sure of is that if the dogs are eating in the same room, they are not allowed to go to the other dog's bowl even after that dog has finished the meal. That bowl disappears.
Right.
I don't even want them licking each other's bowls out.
That's a game a lot of people think is cute, and I don't. I think it's a disaster.
Right. I do too. It's a problem waiting to happen.
Exactly.
For the next couple of minutes, I want you to tell people about you, your Family Paws business, and Dogs and Storks. If you can get that all in 2 minutes, you're doing good. But I want them to know about you.
You know, I'm a certified dog behavior consultant, but I also have a degree in special education and have quite a passion for working with new families and their babies and dogs and everything. And we're actually launching our new program, the Dog and Baby Connection. So people can go to dogandbabysafety.com, and they can read and learn and look at our blog and find out all sorts of information on there.
Okay.
Yeah.
Dog and Baby Connection. That's something new. Yeah. I haven't heard you talk about that.
Yeah, no, absolutely. It's the follow-up program to Dogs and Storks.
Okay.
And, again, all the information is at dogandbabysafety.com.
That's wonderful.
The Dog and Baby Connection information is not quite up there yet because it is so brand new. It's kind of still under wraps, but we are expecting it out
next month. And Dogs and Storks, the information for that will be on that website also?
Absolutely.
Okay, that's great. And Family Paws, if anybody wanted to get information from you because you're such an expert in this area, can they contact you there?
They can contact me at jen@familypaws.com, or they can go to familypaws.com website.
And you have things on your website that shows dog body language. You have pictures of children and dogs. You're a wealth of information, not just to the dog-owning community, but to trainers like myself, because you have such fabulous expertise in this area. And I just love when you come here because you do provide an enormous amount of wonderful information to the families that are out there who have dogs. And we want everybody to be safe in the home, and we don't want to have to rehome or euthanize or do anything drastic. Like that.
So, exactly. Well, thank you, Renee, for having me.
You're wonderful, Jen, and thank you so much. And I know we're going to make a date again so that you can come back.
Excellent.
All right?
All right.
You have a great day.
Okay.
Talk to you later. All right, dude. There you go. Thanks for reminding me that we're running out of time. I want to tell you what we're talking about next week. I am going to have a woman by the name of Donna Poehler, who has many specialties, but she actually does a thing with dogs called T-Touch. And it is a way to calm dogs down who are hyper, who have anxiety issues. And she's going to describe this method where she has hands on the dog, and we can learn possibly some maneuvers to do with our own dogs to get them into that calm state of mind. So I hope you have a wonderful week. I hope you join us next week and take your dogs out for a walk, maybe tomorrow afternoon when the sun comes out. So talk to you later, and thanks for listening.